Welcome to the Boston Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com.
Off the turnover, Rondo reverse, banks it in.
Fans, this is your destination for interactive Celtics coverage all season long.
Kelly still has time, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you. Dial in at 347-215-7771.
Green out of the corner, got another one.
Now let's get it started.
Welcome to the Celtics post-game show, brought to you, of course, by Lynda.com. New skills, improve skills now, from developing to design, web, photography, business, you name it, Lynda.com's got it. Be sure to check out the website and sign up for a class or two to improve your array of skills. Celtics post-game show right here. I'm Bobby Krivitsky, your host. Alongside me is Jess Thomas. You can find me on Twitter at Bobby_K91, and you can find Jess at CLNS_JessSayin. You get it. And if you want your opinions to be heard on the show tonight, feel free to call in at 347-215-7771. Again, that's 347-215-7771. Jess, it was a blowout, just like we all expected. Celtics take care of business against the Sixers, 108-89, improved to 30-36 on the season. And now they're in the playoffs as things stand currently. How you feel about that?
Let the party start. It's happening. It's real. Who would have ever thought this team would be 30-36 at this point in the season for what happened earlier in the year? It's unbelievable.
Even just a month ago, it didn't seem likely. A lot of people at the trade deadline were talking about selling players off, making a more aggressive bid to get to the bottom of the NBA standings. Instead, as it stands currently, Charlotte is getting blown out in Utah. They are at the moment ahead of the Celtics, or I guess not anymore with the Celtics game going final now. Miami rolling over Cleveland at the moment, but nonetheless, the Celtics are in seventh place, and by the end of the night, should still be hanging on to a spot in the playoffs. That's just for now. Jess, I got to be honest, I was purely thinking in terms of the eighth seed. Now I'm saying let's push for seven, and who knows how they're going to finish out these final 16 games. Maybe they get a crack at the sixth seed.
Yeah, I mean, Milwaukee's only two games over 500. They're 34-32, so we're only four games behind them. That is very much attainable. I mean, obviously you have to have a good finish to the season and got some tough games, especially the next couple coming up, but Milwaukee's not playing very well, and the Celtics sure are, as we know. They've won five in a row. They've won 7 out of 8. They've won 10 out of 13. They're on fire. So, I mean, who knows? They get a six seed for all we know. It's incredible.
They're rolling right now, and one of the things that certainly was not a factor in tonight's blowout, but they've shown an ability to win these late games that was not there for most of this season. What do you attribute that to? And have you noticed this trend, or am I just on an island on this one?
No, you're definitely not crazy. At the beginning of the year, it was how big of a lead can we blow in the fourth quarter? And most of the time it happened, but that is not happening anymore. In fact, it's pretty much the opposite. We play better as the game goes on. And I think it's a lot of factors. First, getting rid of Rondo and Green. I mean, Rondo was a terrible player at the end of the games because he couldn't score, and Green seemed to always get offensive fouls or not seem to get quite in the right place to make the final play. He did sometimes, but the majority of the time he didn't. So I think getting rid of those two options, and then Bradley's huge in the fourth quarter always. Since we got Isaiah Thomas, obviously he's been out recently, but he's great. He's the best fourth quarter player in the league, so that obviously helps. I think between getting Thomas, Bradley really stepping it up, and Brad Stevens figuring out how to coach in the fourth quarter, I think all of that combined just kind of ended the fourth quarter madness.
Yeah, and I think Brad Stevens is a huge part of the equation. You know, a lot of his play calling at the end of games was considered questionable at best when the season started. Then you started to see it slowly progress. And now when he's got Isaiah Thomas in the fold, who's a closer, the improvement of Avery Bradley, he really does a terrific job of putting guys in position to succeed.
Yeah, he absolutely does. People wanted him to be out of town at the beginning of the year, which I thought was incredible how people could give up so easily just after a year and a couple months. I thought they were crazy, but there were a lot of people asking for his head right away, and then soon as he got rid of Rondo and Green, he took over control of the team and showed that he's clearly an up-and-coming coach, and he knows how to coach, and people knew he knew how to coach. He was incredible at Butler, but no one wanted to give him credit in the NBA, and now he's showing that he can be a coach, and people were thinking it was going to be because of Isaiah Thomas that we were making this turnaround, but we're 4-0 without him, so give Brad some credit too. I mean, obviously give the players the most credit because they're playing great, but Brad just made a huge turnaround, and I don't think it's any coincidence that right as he got rid of the two star players on the team, they got better. What other thing would you say besides Brad Stevens for that?
Yeah, I hear you there. Shocking that Boston fans would be impatient. Who would have thought that? And I'll tell you, I'll tell you, one of the things that I've noticed in the relationship between Stevens and Avery Bradley is that he's really helped AB simplify the game. He doesn't try to make as many home run type plays as he did last year, or even for the beginning of the stretch when Rondo and Jeff Green were first dealt and Bradley became, quote unquote, the guy. Now he has simplified things. He's making the right decision more frequently than trying to do too much. And as a result, he's become a better passer and more of a playmaker.
He absolutely is the guy, as you said. That's what he's turned into. I mean, he's always been a solid player, but now that he's passed his injury problems, he really has taken an incredible leadership role in this team. And I don't think anybody can deny that because he brings it every night and he plays hard. He plays the most minutes. He does locker room availability, and he's just a solid player. I mean, he's a great defender. He's a great shooter. 20 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists tonight. He's only 4 assists away from triple-double, and his double-double is the second double-double of his career. So he's turning things around fast, and he's a consistent scorer, and he's vocal on the court. And I know he's vocal in the huddles because they always talk about what's going on in the huddles. And most of the time they're saying it's Bradley being vocal to the team. So he's taking a huge leadership role, and I'm very happy about that.
Bradley was rewarded this past offseason. He got a nice lengthy 4-year deal, over $30 million from Danny Ainge. And we've only seen him make good on the beginning of this contract, which is going to become more valuable as the salary cap is set to increase when the TV deal kicks in. So this is really going to turn into not just an important piece for the Celtics, but one they're going to get on a very team-friendly contract.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very happy with that deal, and I liked it from the beginning. I mean, he's only 24 years old, and he clearly is showing that he deserves that contract. And being only 24 years old, I don't see how he's not just going to get better and better. Chris Mannix and Mike Gorman were talking in the game tonight about how Mike asked Chris if this was going to be, if Avery's hit his peak or if he's going to keep getting better, and Chris said he was going to keep getting better, and I absolutely agree. I mean, he's so young still, and I don't see any reason, unless he just gets more injuries and just, like, derails his career with injuries, there's no reason he wouldn't get better.
Now, Bradley, an important piece for the Celtics. The Sixers' most important pieces are arguably on the bench in Joel Embiid, and coming up when the lottery happens, who would you rather be? The Celtics, who are poised to make the playoffs, but of course that's going to come at the expense of getting a high draft pick, or the Sixers, who these last couple of years have gone all in with tanking and are hoping to land that superstar and potentially could already have one in Embiid, we'll find out starting next year.
Well, I know, some people love tanking, and that's just their idea of fun. For me, this is the most ridiculous question that I've ever been asked. What would I rather be? Well, a great time to ask me as we get into the playoffs here. Of course, I'd rather be the playoff team than be the Celtics. Tanking is so crappy. I mean, you just lose 75-80% of your games. You're terrible. Nobody wants to win. Your coach is miserable because he knows that you're supposed to lose, even though you assume his nature would want to win, but they don't do that, obviously, and all your up-and-coming players, hardly any of them are playing. It's too much of a risk. The draft's too much of a risk. I think it's always been that way. It's been a huge issue for the Celtics, and I don't think you can rely on it. And good luck to the Sixers if that's what they're relying on, because they don't really have that many good players, and they're just a poor team, and it's going to be a long time in the making for them. Meanwhile, the Celtics just get a couple players, they play together, and whoever they bring in plays great, and they're going to be good now. Obviously, if they get someone extra, that'll just make them better. But this team's playing so well together right now, and I think that's more what it is. than having like a superstar player. It's having guys that play together on the same page, which they weren't earlier in the year, and now they certainly are. I don't think they need a superstar. I mean, if you want to win a championship, yeah, you know, obviously you need like excellent players, but for right now, what they're doing, they're winning every game, and they don't have a superstar, and they're playing together, and they seem to all like each other. That's the ingredient to success, in my opinion.
Me, you, and Pat Riley are all in agreement that tanking is not the way to go. It's brutal on the players, the fans, the front office, the coaching staff, everyone involved or affiliated with a team. So I agree with you 100% there. Now, what we'll have to see is when this question gets answered a bit more earnestly in 3 years from now or so, when we see what came to fruition, what the Sixers were able to get out of such an extreme approach to building a championship contender, and conversely, what the Celtics got out of getting into the playoffs. You know, those benefits that we all speak about right now, what they would get out, we'll see how impactful those prove to be. But I certainly think that it's going to pay huge dividends, especially for the young core, to be able to experience postseason play, not just physically, but mentally, including learning how to pace yourself through an 82-game grind. Especially, you're a player like Marcus Smart. You're just coming out of college. You talk about the rookie wall. He not only had to get over that, which he's already passed, but he's going to now learn what he's going to have to do to be able to get into the postseason at the end of 82 games and now elevate himself to play his best basketball.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge, huge difference to go from college to the NBA. That's why so many players have so much trouble and most don't even get there. And if you're already playing an 82-game schedule, which is already a ton, then you add a playoff series onto that. That's real tough, which is obviously why most young teams don't go very far in the playoffs, because that's a tough task, and you need guys who have experience doing that, which is what you need, which is another reason why the Sixers are going to be bad for so long, because, okay, so you have Joel Embiid, and you have Nerlens Noel, and Dario Saric, if he ever gets to the USA, and maybe a draft pick coming up. You have those guys. Okay, so who are your leaders, your veteran leaders? Because Joel Embiid and Nerlens Noel aren't going to lead a playoff team very far because they're really young. So who are their veterans? Jason Richardson. Okay, who else? Nobody. So what are they going to do? They're going to go nowhere, and they're still not going to be that good. So if they have to do a trade to get somebody who is a veteran, because as their team stands now, they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
You're listening to the Celtics Postgame Show, brought to you by CLNS Radio. For all the best in written and audio content, be sure to check out clnsradio.com. Someone who can attest to that firsthand, who's on the phone with us right now, is Ty Ray. Ty, how you doing?
Good, guys. I might as well be hosting the show. The way that you guys have sung Stephen's praises, I might as well be hosting the show. I said this all throughout last year. I think it was absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous, and showed a complete lack of basketball knowledge for people to be so critical of Stevens even earlier this year and last year. The idea that somehow he was going to come in to this volatile roster and this volatile time in Boston Celtics history and turn them into some sort of contender was absolutely asinine. And what we've seen now is the fact that Stevens can coach because he has a set roster. It's just logical. The other thing we're finding out is, you know what, maybe Rajon Rondo wasn't that good. Maybe Jeff Green wasn't that good, right? Remember all the talk when Ainge traded Rondo, it's the end of the world, of course we're tanking, we're trading away Jeff Green, of course the Celtics are tanking. Well, maybe, just maybe, these guys that are basketball legends, and I'm talking about Danny Ainge, and I'm talking about Brad Stevens, who is a legend in basketball because he coached a Butler team, a mid-level school, the two back-to-back friggin' NCAA championship games. That's never been done before. So I'm going to use the word legend. Just maybe these two legends know a little bit more about coaching the game of basketball. And Danny does too, by the way. We forget Danny Ainge was the coach of the Phoenix Suns, had a 600% winning percentage. I don't know if you guys knew that or not. He was a great NBA coach, just got out of it. But my point being, just maybe, these guys know a little bit more about the game than all of us, right? And it just took some time. Now, I got to tell you guys, this is the most fun, you can quote me on this, I've had watching Boston Celtics basketball in a few seasons, and I'm counting a few of Doc's seasons too. the fact that this team every night busts its ass for 48 minutes. By the way, that is a rarity in the NBA to have a team go up and down the floor for full lengths of games. We know teams take time off. The Celtics team does it. This team's got character. It's got pride again. And better yet, what I like about Stevens is he's a maker of men. Ask Shelvin Mack, who plays for, you know, plays in Atlanta. Ask Gordon Haywood just how good a coach he is and just how good a life coach he is. So the Celtics are not just set from a basketball standpoint, but from a character standpoint. And that's what I want from my team moving forward. And I see it. I've seen it since Stevens arrived. Listen, you don't need to throw chairs. You don't need to scream at officials. You don't need to throw a tantrum like a two-year-old in a high chair to be a good coach. And it drives me crazy when I hear that why doesn't Stevens have more technicals? Why doesn't he yell at the officials? That doesn't mean you're a winner. That doesn't mean you're a winner at all. Look what Tony Dungy did throughout his NFL career. Did you ever see that man go ballistic on the sideline once, guys? Ever? Ever?
No. Nope. Ty, amen. Listen, Brad Stevens, I mean, it's a shocker, Ty. I've already had to say this once on the program today. It's a shocker that Boston fans would be impatient and, of course, believe that they understand things more than the guys running the show. You know, you got everyone second-guessing Bill Belichick, who just won a Super Bowl, and now everyone was ready to, you know, fire Brad Stevens and get rid of Danny Ainge.
Fire Danny Ainge. Let's see. He's the only three-sport All-American in high school, right? Basketball, football, and baseball that's ever happened, I think, in sports history. He's got two championship rings that he won with the Boston Celtics. One of the all-time leaders in three-point shooting. Hang on here, guys. I can continue with the superlatives. 600 winning percentage as an NBA coach. Oh, yeah, has an NBA title as a GM, which very few GMs have right now in the league. Assembled an incredible team with the big three and made great free agent signings. By the way, that's a different topic for a different show, the idea that big-name free agents don't want to come to Boston. That's just bullshit. But we can talk about that at some other time. Let's second guess those types of people. Let's second guess Brad Stevens, who took a mid-level school to two our NCAA title games back to back, which is just unheard of. Nearly won one if it weren't for a shot that caromed off around the rim at a buzzer. Let's see here. I mean, I could go on and on and on, guys. So when you know what, I've got to quit following social media. That's it. That's it in a nutshell. I've just got to stop, or I'm going to go insane. You know, of course, all the people that were negative toward Ainge and Stevens now think they're geniuses. How good were those trades that Ainge made, by the way? Before I get off the phone, you guys have got to hear me out here. How good was that Rondo deal? My God, Jay Crowder is the best player in the whole deal, and that includes Rondo now.
Yeah.
You know, that includes Rondo now. Jeff Green turns out to be, you know, Jarrell Cohen and Louis DeTomey. I mean, it's just... Ainge should be thrown in jail for theft, seriously, for the trades that he's pulled off in the last
former executive of the year for a reason.
Exactly. And the Nets deal, for all the crying we heard about KG and Pierce because of all the sentimentality, which I understand that, especially initially. How well has that worked out? Tyler Zeller, who is a product of that deal, scores 26 tonight. When's the last time KG scored 26 points?
Let's not forget.
And I love Kevin Garnett, my favorite player.
Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's just, it's never ending, and it's going to get nothing but better. So excuse me tonight, guys. I haven't really called into many post-game shows because my work schedule hasn't allowed it, and I haven't hosted either. So this is giving me a great opportunity. So I appreciate you giving me the floor like a senator filibustering, you know. But I do appreciate it, and I'm so excited. I'm so excited about, even if they don't make the playoffs, how much fun has this been to watch? Seriously. I'll tell you what was one of the hardest seasons for me to watch was Doc's final season when we had all the guys from China, including, you know, Shaq Randolph. And there were so many games to me that were mailed in that year. The team looked disinterested. They knew Doc, it was Doc's last year. And it was just so hard to watch the end of that. So to see a team with this kind of youthful enthusiasm playing at the level they are, playing smart, and so young, guys, and executing in the fourth quarter, that's what's so impressive. That, to me, is what's impressive. So young, executing in the fourth quarter, that is not the sign of a young team. That's a veteran team. And I agree with you guys, and I'll let you go. I agree with you guys on this. You do not need to have a superstar to win a title. You don't. You absolutely do not. And we saw that last year with San Antonio. Sure, Tony Parker is an outstanding player, but he's not the player he once was. Tim Duncan, former MVP, not the player he once was. Solid. The San Antonio Spurs last year, that to me is the model for winning NBA titles. Right there. Right there. It's not going out and assembling a couple people, even though the Celtics did that, and I'm happy they did that. But there's a reason why Pops is a genius, and there's a reason why San Antonio wins year after year, because it's about team. And I hope that Danny believes in that, and I hope Brad Stevens. I'm afraid Stevens is going to leave, guys. That's what I'm scared of. That's actually what I'm more scared of than anything else.
I can't see him going anywhere, Ty. I think he likes it here. I think he's excited about what they're building, which he's, of course, an instrumental part of. This team's only going to get better. I think he is excited to – he's just on the precipice right now of experience winning in Boston.
Yeah, and the fans will love him. I mean, they will absolutely – if he – I tell you what, if they go to the playoffs this year, let's say they win one game against Atlanta, which I think they're capable of doing – don't you guys think they could at least win one game? Does anybody in the East really scare you to think that the Celtics couldn't take a game in an NBA playoff series?
No.
Go ahead, guys.
There's no one entering the postseason who I would look at and say the Celtics are going to get swept and they just stand no chance. Even Cleveland, who they got blown out by in Cleveland, I still would go into that series if that's how things unfolded, saying, well, the Celtics can at least get a game here. There's no team who I say it's automatic, four and out, don't even show up.
No, I agree with you. I agree. And you know, the other thing that'd be fantastic, too, is if the Celtics do make the playoffs, you know damn well whoever they face in that first round is going to dread it, because they know they'll actually have to work. They know that they'll actually have to play a full game and not take a night off like teams in the NBA do. They're going to actually have to friggin' earn it. And how much fun, and I'll just leave it at this, how much fun will it be to have just one playoff game this year at Boston Garden? And I'm going to call it Boston Garden because that's all I refer to it as. But how much fun would that be? Just one play. That crowd will go apeshit.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say that later in the show, that whoever the Celtics play in the playoffs, if they make the playoffs, is going to be terrified and not going to want to play us at all.
No, not at all. They're just not going to want to do it. I'm not going to say the Celtics will win that series, because odds are that they wouldn't. But the fact that they would have to make a team work, because let's face it, a lot of 8 seeds go into the playoffs, right? Going, okay, we made it, big deal. And then they get swept. You know, very few 8 seeds give a 1 seed a run for the money at all. And I think in this case, I know whoever would be the number 1 seed, be it probably the Hawks, they're not going to want any part of that. And you might want to remember back, of course, the Celtics won the game right before the All-Star break on the Turner shot. They also had a 26-point lead, we may recall, in Atlanta, correct? Earlier this year that they pissed away. So yep. It's not like they haven't played the Hawks tough this year. So I'm going to leave it at that, guys.
Atlanta,
great show.
They beat Atlanta going into All-Star weekend. And you said the model in your eyes is the Spurs, which I don't think many people would disagree with. Well, you get to play the Spurs East in Atlanta in the playoffs. You get to take a lot away from that and build going into next season.
No, you're right. And I'm looking at the Hawks roster. Here's the other thing. If we're going to get wild and crazy here and predict the Celtics-Hawks opening playoff series, well, who do the Hawks have that has incredible playoff experience on that team? Who? I mean, they have some veterans on that team, no doubt, Horford and Korver. But we're not talking about a team that's accustomed to being a top seed in the NBA playoffs. So they're going to be facing enormous pressures themselves. So that would be, I think, a great case scenario for the Celtics to play the Hawks in the opening round. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's just enjoy this. Let's just enjoy the ride we're on now. The Celtics may not make the playoffs, but really, guys, who would have expected this? This is so much fun. And the Celtics have been playing well for a very long time now. This is just in a couple of weeks. They've been playing well for a long time. What did they start out at? What, 13-26 on the year? Was that right? 13-26.
That's
so at this point, what are they? So they're 17-10 since then. That's pretty damn impressive. That's 27 games. That's a pretty good sample size. So there's no reason to believe that this won't continue at all. So anyway, guys, great show. I'm going to listen, and let's celebrate this great victory, and let's celebrate this great time in Celtic history. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Ty, we appreciate you taking the time to come on and drop some knowledge. Always love hearing from you.
Take care, my friends. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ty. See you later.
Absolutely. Ty letting us know what's up, giving Celtics fans the business right there. And we're about to get some knowledge dropped on us in just a second from Jared Weiss. I can't wait for that either, Jess.
Yeah, me either. That was awesome.
He's a passionate man.
My day was just like completely made by that. That was hilarious. I mean, that's exactly like everything that I always want to say, but can't find the words to put it into an actual sentence like he did. So that was literally like, I'm so excited about this team, and he just illustrated all those points beautifully. And if anyone can listen to what Ty just said and not believe what he just said and think that this team's crap and that they're going nowhere and that Brad Stevens is a bad coach, then you need to rethink, because he knows what he's talking about, and he just completely said it all right there. He nailed it.
Yeah, I would say if you disagree with his sentiments, especially on Brad Stevens, that you need to watch these games a little bit closer. And also, Jess, this team, I've been saying it for a while now, and it's been evident all season that they are so enjoyable. They're so easy to get behind. And because of the stigma of Rondo, removing him, you know, I'm not going to bash on him too much because I do think he's a very good player. And even the situation in Dallas is more a product of him being an ill system fit than it is anything else. But without Rondo, who is easy to dislike, it became even easier for people to get behind this team and pay attention and start rooting for them. And now that they're actually in the playoff chase and football season's over, baseball season hasn't started just yet, you know, a lot of eyes are on the Celtics.
Yeah, and they're doing it exactly the right time. It's hilarious. And the other thing is, not just Rondo leaving, but then Green leaving. People liked Green, me included, but people didn't like the inconsistency, and people didn't like kind of his glum attitude and his post-game interviews and stuff like that. So I think when he left, people just liked him even more than they already did before that. And it's like, look at this team. What is not to like? Who could not like Avery Bradley? He just comes to play. Who could not like Brandon Bass? The guy hustles to no end and never takes a playoff. Tyler Zeller, he's like the nicest guy in the world. He's just like the simple dude. He just goes out and plays and does some interviews and owns every game. How can you not like that? Jay Crowder, he hustles like crazy. Marcus Smart, probably the player of the future for this team, and talk about working hard. I mean, and just all the other guys. And then you got Evan Turner, who some people still don't like and people think that was a mistake. The guy brings it every night, and he always does something. If he's not scoring, he gets rebounds and assists, and then he'll score 30 points and win you a game by himself. Like, how can you not like that? I mean, just like nobody not to like on this team.
Evan Turner was in fuego Friday against Orlando. 30 points off the top of my head. I believe he was 12 of 15 after the first quarter. And another guy who's quickly becoming a fan favorite as he starts to get minutes is Gigi Datome. Played 20 minutes tonight, shot 4 of 8 for 10 points. He has found a spot in the rotation and is actually starting to make a difference. And, of course, he's number 70. He's Italian. He's got the ponytail. People love this guy.
Well, it's not to love. He brings the energy. He scores every game he plays. And he had 3 blocks tonight out of nowhere, the only 3 blocks for the team. He makes things happen. So, once again, another guy, how could you not like him? But, I mean, somebody that people fall in love with, Tyler Zeller. I mean, he scored a career high in points tonight. 26 is a career high. 11 for 15. He did it in 28 minutes. He's been like the steal of the season. Like, no one expected to get much out of him at all. No one really even knew who he was. And he's had a number of really, really good games, and he just works hard. I mean, he's one of my favorite players on the team. This guy's great.
And I'll tell you, Jess, we talked about the value of Avery Bradley's contract earlier in the season. Really, this whole team, including Isaiah Thomas, who they got for peanuts at the trade deadline, this whole roster was built on good value plays by Danny Ainge and the rest of that front office.
Yeah, absolutely. This is just so much fun. I'm loving every minute. I love doing these post game shows when the playoffs are getting near and the team just keeps racking up wins. I mean, like this is some good stuff going on right here. We got a bright future.
Now, Jess, we definitely want to adhere to Ty's advice and just enjoy and appreciate the moment, regardless of whether or not they get into the playoffs and what happens should they in fact make it. But just for a second, just to look ahead to the offseason, who do you think is a realistic free agent target for the Celtics?
Well, I don't look too much at free agents because I just, like Ty said, I like to just enjoy the moment. But a name I've been hearing thrown around quite a bit is Greg Monroe, who's currently on the Pistons. I think that would be an excellent move because he's a big dude. He's always around the rim. He gets all kinds of rebounds, and he's a very good scorer. I mean, the last time the Celtics played the Pistons, he torched them inside. He scored 30 points or something, and he was making everything and keeping Detroit in the game. So I think he would be an excellent addition, and he's another big guy that they could definitely use. I mean, people have been talking about for the last 2 years is getting a rim protector, and the guys they have are doing a pretty good job. But if you can add Greg Monroe to that mix, that could be really good.
Well, Greg Monroe is not a rim protector, and the other knock on him is that he doesn't stretch the floor like you would like if he's going to play the power forward position. So either going to play him at the five and continue that streak of not having a true rim protector since the departure of Kendrick Perkins, or you're going to play him at the four and potentially compromise spacing just a bit. But I'll tell you what, if Danny Ainge signs him, we're obviously going to have to see what that contract looks like, but I'm going to trust that signing and be very excited about bringing in a player with that type of offensive talent, both as a low post presence and as a passer as well. Now, because it's hard to predict the future on what players might be coming in and out of Boston, what are your expectations? Where do you expect the Celtics to be come next season?
Well, you mean like in standings-wise?
Yeah, you know, they went from last year being at the bottom of the league to making a significant jump this year to a potential playoff team. Where do you expect them to be next season?
Well, I mean, it really depends on who they have and who they get rid of and who they keep and all that. But, and it also depends on how they finish this year and what they do in the playoffs if they make it. That will all probably change my answer. But at the current moment, seeing how things are going, I mean, if they keep the same team, I don't see why they wouldn't keep getting better because they're playing together and they're getting more used to each other. So granted, you would assume they would just keep getting better and better. So I could see, especially with the talent level in the East, maybe even up to like a fifth seed in the East, if they keep playing like this, I could definitely see them in the fifth slot.
That would certainly be exciting if they get up to have a chance to be sniffing home court advantage in the playoffs next year. Because let's not forget, Jess, the East may not be the most talented conference overall, but there are some quality teams at the front of it. You know, you'll get Chicago when they're healthy, and of course, even when they're not, which is the case at the moment, I know Tibbs is going to find a way to get maximum production out of his roster. Of course, you've got LeBron and company in Cleveland. You've got, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Miami when they get Chris Bosh back next year. You look at Washington, Toronto, who's been struggling, but that's still a good starting five. So there's a lot of talent at the top of the East. And if the Celtics can bolt themselves into that discussion, even if it's on the fringe of it, that would represent another significant jump and get you real excited at being on the cusp of once again being back in title contention.
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting the fifth seed, then you're talking about one of the best. I mean, there's 15 teams in the conference. You're talking about being better than 10 teams in the conference, and that's significant. If you can go from one of the worst teams in the conference to that in just 2 years, then you're making a huge, huge, huge change in just a short period of time. So that would be my goal for them, and I mean, we'll see who they get, but that would be my hope.
Now, I don't know if you've been looking at the draft at all, and of course, that's another thing that's impossible to predict at this point in time, but are there any prospects that intrigue you, that catch your eye, who you think would be a good fit on the Celtics?
Yeah, I do. And this may just be me being caught up in the NCAA tournament currently, but if you're trying to think of a specific spot that maybe the Celtics have been looking at a mock draft right now on NBADraft.net, and at the number 18 slot, which I'm kind of feeling like would be somewhere. I mean, obviously it depends on how the year ends, but if they get out of the lottery and all that, then I could see Frank Kaminsky of Wisconsin being a great fit because he's one of the best players in college. And what can he do? He shoots threes. He's tough. He's strong. He goes to the basket. He moves incredibly well for a 7-footer. So, I mean, I don't know a ton about college. I'm learning, but if I could have Frank Kaminsky on my team, I'd be happy. You always want 7-footers who are good at a lot of things.
As we get closer to the draft, this is just a prediction, but what I'm expecting to hear is a lot of comparisons between the man you just mentioned, Frank Kaminsky, and Doug McDermott. For one, I'm just going to say it. It's not why I would compare them, but you know how things tend to go, where the fact that they're two white players who are potential lottery picks, that's bound to come into the equation. And also, more importantly, the fact that on the court, both of them, they don't bring much to the defensive side of the ball, but offensively can score from anywhere. Kaminsky has great footwork. He's not the most athletic of players, but he can put the ball on the floor. He's very crafty with his dribble. He's a good passer, can obviously stretch the floor as a three-point shooter, and that's primarily what he'll be, a pick-and-pop guy. But hey, like you said, you know, that's important in today's game. If you can get a stretch four like Kaminsky and he's consistently knocking down threes against NBA defenses, that's a huge addition to this Celtics team, especially for Brad Stevens, who emphasizes spacing.
Yeah, I mean, you can never go wrong with a 7-footer who can play the game. I mean, you're seeing when Kelly Olynyk, I mean, he's not even very consistent right now, but when he has a good game, things change dramatically for the team. And then Tyler Zeller, I mean, he's a 7-footer, and he's not even like a jump shooter or like a three shooter like Kaminsky is, but he makes a huge difference, and he bangs down low and plays against guys his size and scores 26 points as he did tonight. So, I mean, 7-foot guys who can move and can play are pretty valuable in my opinion.
Absolutely. There's never a shortage of those on a roster. Can never have too many guys like that. Now let me ask you, Jess, Phil Pressey is really a guy who makes the most out of when he's called upon. And he was another guy, along with Evan Turner, who was instrumental in coming back and being able to beat Orlando. When he came in late in the third quarter, the energy picked up immediately. And then finally, they broke through in the fourth quarter once Turner got hot. When Isaiah Thomas comes back, do you keep Pressey in the rotation, given that he has a positive effect on these games and he's a contributor for them? Or do you say, you know what, we've got Turner, we've got Smart, we've got Thomas back, and he's got to once again ride the bench?
I mean, I hate to say it, but probably ride the bench, because it's just really not a place for him to play when Thomas is playing. And he is a good player, and he makes a difference. And he had 10 points and 10 assists a couple of games ago. He's a really good player, and he's quick. He makes things happen. But he's an easy guy to just put on the bench when you have Turner, Smart, and Thomas out there, because they're all very talented players. And Pressey's just kind of a guy who you can take his action when he gives it to you, but if he's not in, it doesn't make a gigantic difference. And I don't know if I'm saying this the right way, but I love him. I want to see him play more, but it's just really not a place for him to play when Thomas is in.
Yeah, I hear you there. You know, it's the role and the life of a third string point guard that someone goes down, you're going to be expected to be ready to step up. And when those guys come back and everyone's healthy, you got to once again just wait for your number called. Someone who's been waiting and he got in at the end of this game because it was a blowout was James Young. Now, he's obviously lost his spot in the rotation to Gigi Datome, who has stepped up and is a bit more experienced, more proven. After all, he is a former Italian League MVP. What did you make of that decision to put Datome in the rotation and take James Young, who figures at least to be more a part of the future, and have him just sit and learn from the bench and cut his minutes?
I'm fine with it because, I mean, Gigi, has been sitting on the bench for basically his whole career in USA, and he needs a chance to play. I mean, I could feel like how grateful he was to just get a chance to play when he got into a decent amount of minutes in his first game, and you gotta love that. And I mean, James Young is 19. He's raw on defense, and yeah, he's a great scorer, but his offense really hadn't been very good recently when he was playing more minutes. And I mean, he's got time to get better. I mean, maybe he'll be a good player in the future, but for the time being, you play who's good, and I think Gigi's got a big leg up on him at the moment.
Agreed there, and that's why he's in the rotation. We shall see what the future holds for James Young. And just a reminder that the Celtics postgame show is brought to you by Lynda.com. New skills, improved skills. Now learn technology, creative, and business skills that you can use today. Be sure to check out Lynda.com. And if you want to call into the Celtics postgame show, feel free to do so. Make your opinions heard by dialing 347-215-7771. Again, that's 347-215-7771. And now we've got our Celtics insider joining the program. We've got Jared Weiss from The Guarded. Jared, how you doing?
What's up, guys?
Dissecting a somewhat expected blowout victory over the Philadelphia 76ers, two teams taking vastly different approaches to get back into title contention. What was the mood like in the locker room after such a big victory? And it figures to stand that at the end of the night, this team's going to be in the playoffs now.
It's kind of amazing to think that they're the 8th seed considering everything that has happened. And by the way, if you were wondering if the Hornets were going to hold on to one of those playoff spots, they're currently down 81-39 to the Utah Jazz, which my brain is starting to spin a little bit here. So they're down 42. I don't think the Hornets are going to come back in that game. And last time I checked, Miami was up like 25 on the Heat. So it looks like the Celtics are sitting at the 8th seed. And pretty much everybody said, whatever, we're in the playoff hunt. We're just looking ahead. We're not really worrying about the playoff seeding right now. Brad Stevens even said during his press conference when asked if the players are thinking about and talking about it, he said that not a single player has brought it up, and I'm not even lying. And it's hard to believe that he wasn't lying, but whatever. Apparently, nobody in the locker room has brought it up once, and that's a pretty remarkable focus on the task at hand, and that's a true on-to-Cincinnati mentality there. It looks like if Cincinnati played if there's an NBA team there, then I guess he would be able to do the on-to-Cincinnati thing here, but I guess it'll be more on to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I mean, that works. Yeah, I mean, this is a big win tonight, and yeah, to follow up on what you said, Miami did beat Cleveland by 14, so they are...
Oh, there you go.
They're still tied with us, but we're tied with Indiana, which means that we're technically in the 7th seed because we beat Indiana. We're up 2-1 on them, so you can tie us for the 7th there.
I think Miami would have the 7 because they are up 2-1 in the head-to-head series on the Celtics, right? So it should be Miami 7,
wow.
Celtics 8, Indiana 9.
But
the Celtics face Miami, I think, on the 25th of this month, so about a week and a half from
yes.
now. So they have a chance. If they win that game, then the Celtics move up to 7. And, of course, that's assuming that there's a tie at that point. It might be different records at that point. I mean, just the fact that the Eastern Conference playoff race is actually getting exciting at the bottom there, where you have three teams that are like 7 games below 500 or more than that. They're well below 500, and they're all competing for the last two seeds there. And you have 4 teams in the race for it. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, The West is not the only conference with an exciting playoff race going on at the back end. Now, let me ask you, Jared, in speaking with the Celtics, is there a common theme that's brought up by both the players and by Brad Stevens?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the common theme is grinding. That's what it's been for the last few weeks. I don't think I heard anyone say the word grinding tonight, but I've been using hashtag grinding lately because it seems every single press conference someone has used the word grinding, even – Even Brad Stevens, who is kind of like, I mean, he's, I wouldn't say he's uptight, but he's kind of like a proper guy from the Midwest. He doesn't use a lot of really colorful language, a lot of youthful language, really. So when he starts using terms like grinding and stuff like that, I think he said tonight, I forget what the word was, but he's using a funny word. I think he said they were fizzing the ball around tonight, which is another one I haven't really heard of use. Brad Stevens' personality has been a little bit more jubilant lately, which is surprising because he's been winning and he's starting to be lauded as one of the best up-and-coming coaches in the league again.
Yeah, it's, absolutely. It's, I mean, it's the playoff mentality is just getting back into the team, and the something I want to ask you about tonight was I know they did Geno time tonight. That must have made it seem like old playoff times for you, and I mean, so many of these players weren't, like, most of these players weren't even here for that. So how fun was that to get Geno time back in the Garden?
That was actually GG time tonight. That's been the game's GG time. And, you know, the one thing that made me sad was I was looking over at the bench when Geno time was playing, hoping that GG would be up and dancing, but he was sitting on the bench shooting back some Gatorade. So unfortunately, we didn't get to see his moves. But actually, one funny thing about GG was he gave his press conference, nothing remarkable there, although he did say this is the first time pretty much that he's been getting consistent minutes since the national team, actually, the Italian national team. But the one thing that was really funny is as he walked away from the press conference, he said, "Hey, my English was pretty good." And that got
always good to hear that the former Italian League MVP is improving both on the court in the NBA and adjusting better to the American lifestyle and the English language. It's always good to hear that out at number 70, Gigi Datome. Now, one player who has been ready every time his number is called upon is Phil Pressey. And Isaiah Thomas, it looks like he might be out a couple more games. What's the status there? What's Pressey's mentality like as he knows that he's going to once again be expected to deliver for this team for now an extended period of time, but then presumably have to go back to just riding the bench when Thomas returns and waiting for his number to be called?
Well, tonight he only went 1-for-7 from the field, and he was going up against Ish Smith, who went 7-for-13 from the field. And frankly, I was not very impressed with Ish Smith's approach to basketball tonight. Defense is sort of an afterthought for him. But the guy is fast and talented. So tonight was a disappointing performance from Pressey statistically. His hustle, his defense is still impactful on the team. Tonight wasn't that good of a game for him. And of course, the Celtics are playing from ahead for a lot of the game. So I say a lot of the numbers for Ish Smith really came in garbage time. But Phil Pressey is, I mean, that was kind of a theme last game. It's Phil's whole thing about staying ready, the coach telling him to stay ready, all that kind of stuff. That really materialized last game when he got his first big minutes in a while. And tonight he got comparable minutes and didn't do a ton with it. But Phil Pressey's always been a little up and down offensively, shooting the ball, scoring at the rim. For him, usually scoring opportunities really come off of turnovers and fast breaks. He didn't really get that quite as much tonight.
Yeah, Jared, I want to talk a little about Avery Bradley. He had 10 rebounds tonight, which is the second time that he's gotten a double-double in the game. What allowed him to get so many rebounds? Because he usually gets like 2 or 3.
He had like 7 in the first quarter or so, or like really early in the game. It was just kind of surprising. I guess it's one of those nights where they're going up against a pretty lousy rebounding team. Robert Covington had a lot of rebounds in the second half. Nerlens Noel had a decent game, but Mamute and Hollis Thompson were really that much of a threat on the glass. So Bass and Zeller were able to box those guys out pretty well, and that allowed Bradley to kind of sneak in there and grab a lot of rebounds. So, yeah, that was a great game overall for Avery Bradley, who's starting to look a little bit better lately. He's just like Phil Pressey. He's pretty up and down shooting-wise, although probably not as bad as Phil Pressey, but he's been really playing a lot harder lately, it seems. And not to say that he was slacking off before, but you just see the drive is there a little bit more now, and he's making plays more now.
Jared, we'll get you out on this question. The Sixers, of course, taking an extreme approach to getting back into contention by quote-unquote tanking, and the Celtics seem to be taking the patient approach that it's the dividends are more noticeable right away, more appreciable, because you see them winning games. Here they are in the playoff hunt. which one at this point in time, where the future is uncertain, really for both squads, which one would you rather be?
I'd rather be the Celtics because, one, there's not as much risk for the Celtics. The Celtics, I know that Philadelphia has three potential all-stars right now on the roster in Noel, Saric, who isn't even on the roster yet, and Joel Embiid, who I thought in college reminded me so much of Hakeem Olajuwon, I couldn't believe it. I mean, the second I saw Embiid play, immediately I was like, oh my God, that's the next Olajuwon. And certainly over time, a lot of people agreed with that. So they've got, I don't think Noel's going to be there for the long term if Embiid gets healthy, though. Noel's, I think, you know, with Saric probably being a four, Noel is someone that could see himself on the way out. And Philly has shown that they're not afraid to trade their assets if they want to. And then, of course, they have another potential top pick if that Laker pick gets to them this year. So, I mean, that's the potential for them to have four franchise cornerstones on their roster is pretty strong. The Celtics don't have that, but the Celtics do have still have an unbelievable just huge pile of picks that they can use to keep making kind of moves, bit moves like the Isaiah Thomas trade, that they have a better ability to continue to have flexibility down the road and still have a foundation. And they have a winning foundation with a winning coach. It's pretty clear that Brad Stevens is going to prove to be a coach that could develop a winning culture. And they have great management. Now, Sam Hinkie, he's a major risk taker. He hasn't really proven over – he hasn't really had the chance to prove yet his long-term development skills. But Danny Ainge has been pretty effective in showing that, one, he's really adept at making moves, and his long-term development skills are pretty strong. So Jared, I would rather be in the Celtics position.
Agree with everything you had to say there. And as always, we appreciate you taking the time out to join the program.
That was a lot of fun, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jared.
Absolutely. And you can follow Jared Weiss at @CLNS_JaredWeiss on Twitter. And if you want to call into this program right now, the Celtics post-game show, feel free to do so. Get your opinions heard by dialing 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. Bobby Krivitsky, Jess Thomas, breaking it down. We got the incomparable Sean Backey on social media for us. Jess, blowout win tonight against the Sixers. Always good for morale and for a team who's competing to get into the playoffs.
Absolutely. That's what you want to do. I actually have an update I just saw on Twitter here. Steve Boltet said that a final decision hasn't been made, but it is possible that James Young will go back to the D League to get some playing time. We talked about him not getting much playing time because of Gigi right now, so kind of a logical move that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes all the sense in the world. If he's not going to get playing time, there's only so much he can learn from riding the bench and practicing with the team. Better off to send him back to Portland, play with the D League and play with the Red Claws, where earlier when he was there, he was lighting it up for that team. He was their leading scorer a handful of times, hitting three-pointers. He looks great, so I think that's going to be important for both his confidence and just to be able to actually get some playing time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he literally has owned the D League this year, so I think it's good for him to get his confidence back up because, I mean, you could easily lose your confidence as a 19-year-old sitting on the bench playing 0 to 3 minutes per game. It's not the way to make progress when you're not even close to 21, really. he's not even 20 yet. So I think very good decision there. But I wanted to ask you, Bobby, they talked about it on Celtics post game show tonight on Comcast Sportsnet. I'm just curious to see your thoughts. I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be, but they were wondering if the Kentucky Wildcats, 34-0 Kentucky Wildcats, could beat the 76ers right now. What do you think?
Jess, I hate this question. It's fun. I get why people bring it up, but in my opinion, it's not even a debate. There's a reason that the Sixers are an NBA team. You know, how many guys from Kentucky, as loaded as they are, do you expect to be in the NBA? And then how many of them do you expect to be contributors to the teams they end up on? You know, keep in mind, Daniel Orton from that Kentucky team that had 6 first-round picks, he was a high draft pick, a lot of potential, didn't do anything in the NBA, and washed out after riding the bench for a number of years, and is now overseas, actually in the Philippines. So you just don't know what these prospects are going to turn into. The Sixers, for as bad as they are, let's not forget, they're not even the worst team in the NBA. There's teams below them right now in the standings. So it's fun. It'd be entertaining. You know, maybe in, let's say, a 10-game series, Kentucky wins a couple of games. But if it's just one matchup, they're not going to win.
No, I mean, it's a completely stupid thing overall. I don't even think they'd win two in a 10-game matchup. They probably wouldn't win any. That's, I mean, yeah, that's, I figured that was going to be your answer, and obviously it's my answer too, because it's stupid to even compare, and people love to do it, but it's just not realistic because the NBA game and the college game are so, so different. There's a reason some of the best players in college don't even make it to the NBA, and if they do, they ride the bench. It's just not even comparable at all. It just shows you how good NBA players are. So people can talk all they want, but like you said, Philadelphia has 15 wins. I mean, 15 wins in the NBA. I don't believe Kentucky would be getting 15 wins in the NBA. So fun thought, but no chance. So I totally agree with you. I was just curious to see if you thought it was crap too. So I'm glad to think you do, that you think it is.
Yeah, it would certainly make the debate a little livelier if I were to switch things up and say I would take Kentucky 10 times out of 10 against Philadelphia. But I just can't do it, Jess. Now, let me ask you this as we switch to the Western Conference. And, wow, that playoff race there and that first round of the playoffs is going to be a monster. Let me ask you, if things hold true and Golden State gets OKC in the first round, and another hypothetical, if the Thunder are healthy, they've got Durant, they've got Westbrook, they've now got an improved bench thanks to the moves made at the trade deadline. Who do you like in that series, and how many games do you think it comes down to?
That's an excellent question. I mean, well, okay, so we're assuming everyone's healthy because Ibaka is also out at the moment as well. So assuming that him and Durant are both healthy, and I mean, who knows how healthy it will be because Durant came back and then went back to the bench for a while. So assuming everyone's perfectly healthy, I don't see Oklahoma City beating Golden State. It's a fun, trendy upset pick, but Golden State's 52-13. Let's be real here. They're 29-2 at home, and they're going to be the home team if that series happens. So, I mean, I think it's their year to go far. I don't know if they'll win it all, but it's their year to definitely go far. And Oklahoma City's had too many injuries this year, and they're just not quite good enough. And I would say we'll go with six games. I don't think it would quite go seven, and I don't think it would be a 4-0 sweep, but I'll say Golden State in six.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Dubs getting it done. And you ready for this interesting statistic? The Warriors have won more 20-plus point games this season than they have total losses. That's 14 20-plus point victories and only 13 total losses on the season.
Wow. They're
really, yeah, really all you can say there when you hear a number like that. And I think that would certainly sway things more in the direction of people who are, you know, in between choosing a series like that should it come to fruition. And I certainly hope that it does happen and that the Thunder are healthy so they can get an honest chance at a championship. Now, looking at the potential for a Western Conference Finals matchup between the Grizz and the Warriors, two completely different styles of play, top two teams in the conference, who would you like in that series and why?
Well, it's funny. I'm usually against picking the higher seed, like speaking of the tournament, since the NCAA tournament, because it's on everyone's mind now. I like to pick the upsets, but in this kind of series, I mean, I got to go with the higher seed at the moment. I know that Memphis is only six games behind Golden State, which isn't a ton, but I think Memphis has more holes than Golden State. Memphis just, I mean, they lost to the Celtics. Not that that's any small thing anymore because the Celtics are so much better. But I don't know. I feel like they have too many holes that a team could pick apart in seven games, especially Golden State, especially if Golden State was the home team, because Golden State's better on the road than Memphis by two games and better at home by a couple as well. Memphis is 26-7 at home. So I think just too many holes. I don't like how Memphis is playing recently. They've been kind of average in the last couple of weeks. So like, once again, it's just the more talent Golden State. I might be more willing to pick another team to beat Golden State, like a Portland and a Houston. I'm just not too high in Memphis at the moment. I just I don't think they could do it. So in the Golden State Memphis series, I would go Golden State in six as well.
Not too high on the Grizzlies. I hear that. Now let me ask you, and this is by no means a reflection of my opinion on them, but the idea of that tandem of Gasol and Randolph going up against Bogut and then Green, which compromises the Warriors' spacing just a little bit, that doesn't at all sway things?
No, I think between Curry and Thompson and just their unbelievable offense, and speaking of Green, Draymond Green is such a good all-around player, and he's one of those hustle guys that just makes everything happen. I just think that would be a little bit too much for the Grizzlies to handle. I could even see the series go to seven games, now that you put that thought into my mind, but I don't think it'd be enough to beat them.
Let me try and put another thought into your mind. Draymond Green, come the offseason, he's not a quote-unquote superstar, but he's certainly an invaluable member of the Warriors. Would you pay him a max contract, or if he gets one from another team, would you let him walk?
If I was Golden State?
Correct.
I would keep him at all costs if they could. I mean, he's such an important player. I would love for the Celtics to have him. Put him and Jay Crowder on the same team. You guys all over the floor doing crazy things all the time. So I would, if I were Golden State, he'd be one of the people I really want to keep. But I hope they get rid of him. I hope the Celtics get him.
Absolutely. What a steal that would be. And I tell you, it would mark the first time that a player who brings what Draymond Green does to the game in terms of it's defense first, it's not a lot of scoring, but, you know, he'll do the dirty work, he'll set the screens. He's a very good passer, so he'll set guys up, but he's also not a point guard, so he's a playmaker, but he's not doing it from a playmaker position in terms of a traditional sense. It'd be the first time that a quote-unquote hustle player, and of course he can do other things, but someone who the core of Draymond's game, of his game rather, is about effort. It'd be the first time we see a player like that get paid at a premium.
Yeah, it's not the guy you think of who would be getting the big deal contract in bucks, but those guys are invaluable. You got to have some kind of gritty guy in every team. You have your James Posey on the 2008 Celtics, for example. It's just, you know, the Jay Crowder types, the Draymond Green types. You got to have those guys who just fill out the stat sheet and get in the floor and get dirty and make everyone else better. It's essential to having a championship team.
It is crucial. Now, Draymond Green, a former Spartan, we'll see what his team does in March Madness. I don't know if you filled out your bracket yet or not. If not, you've still got a little bit of time, but how do you see things playing out in the tournament? Do you have a Final Four in hand already? And if not, just give me who you think is at least playing in the national championship.
Well, I've done a lot of research, but I have not picked anything yet. So maybe I should have for the sake of the show, but I'm thinking about going against Kentucky because I'm tired of hearing about them. I think it's a lot of pressure to go in undefeated, and I know this will probably upset people, but I think someone can beat them. I think they'll have one off game, and I think someone will have an excellent game to come back out at them with when they're struggling. So I think they will lose at some point. When that is, I'm not sure, but I like Wisconsin every year in the tournament, and they just seem even better than they usually are. Going back to Frank Kaminsky, clearly I'm on a trend here with Wisconsin. So I think that, and maybe it's Wisconsin that will beat Kentucky eventually. So I think, I'm not 100% sure, but if you want me to give you a championship pick, I'll go with Wisconsin against Gonzaga. But I could completely change that because I haven't picked anything. That's just a preliminary guess.
We will not hold you to it. And I'll give you another team who could make noise in the tournament, and that's the Arizona Wildcats, who both them and Wisconsin seem like teams that if they matched up with Kentucky, that could knock them off. There's a lot of talent on that Arizona squad, especially now that they've made the change to the starting lineup, and they have both Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Stanley Johnson in the starting lineup. It's really helped to improve their offense, which at times has struggled. So you add a bit more athleticism, a bit more of a that attack mentality to the offense on the perimeter, it's really made a difference for Arizona, who just won the Pac-12 conference tournament.
Yeah, they're a really good team. They could definitely give Wisconsin a run for their money if they play each other. But I mean, that's the thing with the tournament. Who knows if any of these things are going to happen, because everyone speculates on all the possible matchups and stuff, and most 3/4 of the time those matchups don't even happen because the tournament is just a wild animal and insane things happen and teams you wouldn't expect. I mean, last year's championship was a 7-8 seed, so I mean, really no idea about any of these things. But it is fun to speculate, and it's fun to pick and see what happens. But I mean, I just hope somebody other than Kentucky wins, because I think there's way too much focus on them for great reason, but I think it would be excellent. And that's basically the reason I don't want to pick them, is because if they do lose, so many people are going to be so messed up. It's going to be great.
Right. It's a prime opportunity to take advantage and move up some spots, maybe even win your whole bracket because of it. Now,
what are you
picking? I know it's always... See, that's where I'm going right now. I know it's
all right.
Always fun to pick against a team like Kentucky. And I can't decide. I still haven't decided. I go back and forth between, do I want Kentucky to actually accomplish this and go undefeated, or would I rather see the upset? Because in the moment, how fun would that be? Of course. But I filled out a bracket tonight. Like you, there figures to be changes made. You know, I haven't committed. I'm not locked into anything until this thing actually gets underway. But I did not have Kentucky going all the way. I could see a team beating them like Wisconsin, maybe Notre Dame even, you know, with their ability to shoot, Jerry and Grant. I think Chris Mannix even talked about it on the broadcast, actually. So I didn't put it in my bracket, but it's something that I considered happening. But ultimately, the team that I went with for now, and I probably will not change it to Kentucky at the very least, is Arizona. Like I said, Brandon Ashley, another player who I didn't discuss just now, has been the glue. He's the X factor for that team. That Arizona was one of the best teams in the country going into the tournament last year. Brandon Ashley gets hurt, and it changed everything for them. So he brings an important dynamic to this Wildcat squad. So as long as they stay healthy, and if they can avoid those dry spells on offense, which so far has been the case, as we saw in the Pac-12 tournament with the new starting lineup and both Jefferson and Johnson in there, I say, why not Arizona?
Yeah, I really like that you didn't necessarily just automatically go with Kentucky like everyone else is doing. I respect that.
Can't just jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah, it's so easy to do. It's no fun to do. I'm glad you didn't do that. Dare to be different, right?
Exactly. You know, stand out and... you know, one player who talked about fitting out rather than fitting in was Kevin Love. Last year in the offseason, he was the white whale for Celtics fans, hoping that, especially when he came to Fenway Park and he met up with Rondo, that Boston was going to sign him. Do you think there's any chance that he leaves Cleveland in the offseason after just 1 year?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, because I'm not sure how happy he is. I mean, he's a quiet dude. In general anyway, but he's had some pretty bad games, and he's completely overshadowed by LeBron and Kyrie Irving, and he may like that. I mean, he's been the spotlight in Minnesota all these years and didn't really get much done with it, but I guess how good is he really? Because he doesn't make a huge difference for them most nights, and he didn't come close to winning anything with Minnesota, so I'm not sold on how good he is, and I'm not sure how happy he is with them, so I would not be at all surprised if he tried a different situation next year.
Well, see, here's the thing. And like you said, he's going to have to weigh. How much is he willing to sacrifice after experiencing all that individual success in Minnesota, but very little team success, never went to the playoffs before. So this figures to be his first time playing in the postseason. And yet he's not a key cog, which many thought he would be going into the season. And a large part of that is the fact that LeBron ultimately plays the same position as him, because Cleveland is more effective, just like Miami was, when he plays that stretch four position and gives them another dynamic, gives them another wing player or another guard.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, it's funny, because when they got Love, I thought that he would be the more effective and more important player than Irving, because I was more sold on him. He'd been in the league longer and he'd had such good success. But Irving's had a great year and some massive games, much more than Love. So I was pretty surprised when when Love wasn't the main component, but it's probably because of what you just said with LeBron playing a similar position, and he kind of takes his shots, and Love will have some games where he shoots like five shots and just like disappears and like barely plays. So not the greatest situation for him. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he wanted to go elsewhere.
Yeah, we've heard David Blatt say recently that Love's back has been bothering him. It's been affecting his play. But I mean, that game against San Antonio, which I don't know if you saw it or not, or just caught the highlights, but in my opinion, it was the best game of the season to date. And Kevin Love sat the entire fourth quarter, and he finally got in at the end of overtime. And even then, he wasn't a factor outside of just standing in the corner and being able to stretch the floor in that sense, but really wasn't a difference maker even when he did get in.
Yeah, and it's weird how he hasn't really performed, but and yeah, some injuries and like kind of and now he's like sitting for rest, so it's kind of a weird situation with him. I'm sure they're trying to gear him up for the playoffs, but I wonder if he ultimately could be the more of a downfall than a big help for them in the playoffs. I'm very interested to see how they play in the playoffs.
Now let me ask you to talk about trendy picks. LeBron James, that bandwagon is an easy one for fans to jump onto. So a lot of people, they point to LeBron James and they say that Cleveland, even if they meet up with Atlanta in the Eastern Conference Finals, they just lost them not too long ago, doesn't matter. They're going to pick the Cavs to advance and come out of the East. If Cleveland meets up with the Hawks in the Eastern Conference Finals, are you once again going with the underdog? Or this time, are you going with who, even despite the worst seeding, Cleveland, you going with LeBron?
No, I pick Atlanta in a series against Cleveland. I think they're a really good team. They're 52-14. It's incredible. I mean, they're real consistent. They got some very solid players with T. Horford, Korver, and Damari Carroll. They've got really good pieces, and they've completely surprised everyone, and I think they're enjoying the fact that nobody picked them to do anything. Actually, I picked them to win their division before the year started, but for no reason. But I did not expect them to be 52-14 at this point, for sure. I mean, they're 30-4 at home, and they're 22-10 on the road. And road record's always important to look at for the playoffs, and they're excellent there too. So, I mean, yeah, they probably have their flaws. We saw those against the Celtics, blowing a big lead, but they played a pretty bad game that night and still almost won. So, on the road. So, I think they're a really good team, and I still think that Cleveland's a little too top-heavy with James and Irving. If they have off nights, and if Love continues to play kind of poorly like he has, then I think they could definitely be beaten. I do not think Cleveland's invincible, and I think I'd pick Atlanta in that series.
And can I tell you, I would too. Granted, there's always the possibility that LeBron elevates his play to another level. Kyrie, who's been playing exceptionally well as of late and is really starting to excel in that number two role next to LeBron. You know, there's already debates. Is he better than what Dwayne Wade was at the beginning of that partnership? So we'll see. But one of the things I took out of that game against Atlanta was the fact that when Cleveland ran the pick and roll for LeBron, which obviously they love to do, who wouldn't? The Hawks would blitz that, especially with Paul Millsap, and Cleveland couldn't figure it out. They were turning it over consistently, or they just couldn't get a shot off, or they'd force a bad look. You know, Atlanta, to me, has not just the philosophy and that style of team ball, but they have the versatility to beat Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to have the tools because they're a very good defensive team, and they're just efficient on offense. They put their whole game together. I mean, you don't win 52 out of 66 games by accident, and people aren't sold on them, and people aren't going to give them the credit until they win a championship, probably. But I think they're a pretty legit team, and they got a lot of good pieces. And kind of like we're talking about with the Celtics, they don't have a superstar. I don't think you can call Al Horford or Jeff Teague superstars. They're definitely stars, and they're really good, but they're not at superstar level yet. They have the most wins in the NBA, so clearly you don't need that, and they show that well.
Right, underrated, but not superstars either. It's going to be interesting. Now, you're high on the Warriors, you're high on the Hawks, two teams with coaches that can be traced back to Greg Popovich, two teams that are incredibly exciting to watch. If they match up in the finals, who do you like?
Oh, man. You're bringing out all the stuff tonight, boy.
We're going around the league. We're looking at the postseason. We talked draft for a little bit. We're going all over the place, Jess.
Yeah, we got quite the topic list tonight. Whew. Jeez, that would be a great NBA Finals, I'll first say.
Absolutely.
Boy, I mean, you caught me off guard here, but I think I'm going to have to go with Golden State. And I'm doing that because they've had a number of years where people thought they were going to be better. They thought they would get really close to the finals or be in the finals or whatever, and they didn't do it. And this year, under Steve Kerr, they've just totally, completely taken it up to that level. And I think that was more expected. And since Atlanta wasn't in, and because the Western Conference is obviously the better conference, and Golden State's done this well in the Western Conference. Although Atlanta has a really, really good record against the Western Conference, so don't take that away from them. So, but I think Atlanta, just if they get that far, they might run out of gas and almost become satisfied with how far they got, just because they were supposed to do nothing this year. And I think Golden State is going to go for it all, and Curry and Thompson are so motivated. So I think they would have the slight edge, but I wouldn't be surprised if it went to seven games. So I'm going to say Golden State seven if that happens.
Who wouldn't love that matchup, and who wouldn't love a seven-game NBA Finals? That would be exciting. Just to put my prediction on the record as well, I agree with you, Golden State. It's interesting you'd say that Atlanta would be the team coming out of the weaker Eastern Conference that would run out of gas, and not the Warriors, especially if they had to start things off against the Thunder. But I do agree. I think the Dubs, I feel like as long as they stay healthy, which is a huge if with Andrew Bogut, who's injury-prone, but if he's still standing upright, if Curry and Clay are there and Draymond Green, I think this is the best team in the NBA, even though they're just below the Hawks in league standings right now. I think they're the most talented team in the league. I even like their bench, which got stronger in the offseason thanks to additions like Sean Livingston, among others. So I think this is the year that the Warriors take it. And how fun would that be? Quite frankly, in my opinion, Oracle is the most exciting arena in the NBA when the Celtics aren't good. Relax, fans of the green and white. When the Celtics aren't competing for championships, the place is still rocking, but it's a little different when you have a squad that is going for it all and is an immediate contender like the Warriors. So how fun would it be to see Oracle Arena, one of the most exciting places to be in the league, going nuts as they watch their team win a championship?
Yeah, that'd be fun. I mean, they're 29-2 at home, like I said, and that's partly because their crowd's incredible. But I do want to say I think they're the front runner and to win the finals for sure. But we kind of just jumped into Golden State versus Memphis and then beyond. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't necessarily think it's gonna happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if some other team upset them along the way, because as you know, there's a lot of good teams in the West, in Portland, Houston, San Antonio, L.A., Dallas, Oklahoma City. There's a lot of really good teams, and they're all right around the same record, 40, 41, 42, 44 wins. So I wouldn't necessarily stamp their ticket because they could get upset, but I think at this point they do have the best chance.
I definitely wouldn't go stamping their ticket just yet. It is a jam-packed Western Conference. Really, anyone 1-8 is a legitimate championship contender. You know, New Orleans is competing for a playoff spot. Phoenix is kind of trying to hold on to stay in contention. I don't think many people see them getting in to the postseason. But you look at the Spurs, 7-3 in their last 10 games, Tony Parker getting healthy. So they're starting to pick things up. Portland was a team who I really liked and thought was underrated. But then, of course, the injury to Wes Matthews, that was unfortunate, especially for a player in a contract year who's performed as well as Matthews did. So that was unfortunate to see. And, you know, as long as they have home court advantage, they could certainly win a series. I don't see them winning two rounds, though. The West is just too competitive. But like you said, to your point, that's why you can't go stamping anyone's ticket just yet. And who can predict the future when it comes to anything? Anyways, Jess, the reason we went around the league, the reason that we were talking offseason and March Madness, not just because it's relevant, but because the Celtics played the lowly Sixers tonight. It was a blowout. This game was over before the tip-off, in fact. And so, you know, that's why we had to do this dance. But I appreciate you going around the league with me and taking the time. A lot of interesting opinions there. Seemed like we agreed on a lot as well.
Yeah, we did. It is funny how we kind of came around to the same kind of ideas. But I mean, obviously we're thinking pretty similar about all things basketball, and that's probably a good thing, because I assume we know what we're talking about when we're doing the Celtics post game show, and we write about the Celtics and live and eat and breathe basketball. So I'm not surprised at all that we have similar opinions, but it is kind of funny how that worked out, since we didn't like plan it beforehand or anything.
And in my eyes, it's what makes for a good show. So I hope the listeners at home that you all enjoyed it. Want to give a special shout out right now to Sean Backey, who is on social media. Jess, thanks for taking the time as always and indulging me in some of these, I'll just say, you know, conversations rather than debates, I guess, tonight. And once again, to you at home, appreciate you taking the time. CLNS Radio, the Celtics postgame show. Appreciate it. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.